Hello, you're listening to Gaze Gaze, in which we're gay and we gaze into media that's by, for, or about ladies who love ladies. And sometimes we talk about other stuff. I'm Erin, and oh, that's my snail's home.
And I'm Erin, and it hurt, didn't it, when I slapped you in the dining hall? My quote, I picked it because in Utana, our week's topic, it's a very genuine line, but out of context, it sounds really, really menacing. And also because at the time of recording, there's like a meme going around where it's like a joke take on the like, did it hurt line, like when you fell from heaven, but it's like, did it hurt when you like looked at your bank account or like shit like that.
I literally, Erin, I don't know where you're seeing this because I haven't seen it anywhere. Am I just out of touch now?
I don't know. I'm just on a very particular side of Twitter, potentially.
Okay, that makes sense. I've been spending less time on Twitter recently.
Oh, that's good. That's good for you. Good for the brain.
It's because I've been spending more time on TikTok.
Oh, okay. Never mind. You know, yeah, I heard watching TikToks is a trauma response.
Did a TikTok teach you that? I am so glad to be back here after taking a much, much needed month off. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm so good. I live somewhere else now. It happened. I wasn't sure.
You did it.
I did it. And also, update from last episode, my toe is no longer broken.
It's been healed.
I glued it back together.
How'd you do that one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mod Podge. So it's glittery now. I used to glitter Mod Podge.
Do they make a glitter Mod Podge?
Do they?
Oh god, all right, I don't even want to know. I miss this. I'm glad to be back. I'm excited for the next few episodes that we have planned, and yeah, just excited to get back into it, even though today we're talking about Utana, which is fine. I'm glad that we're doing Utana, actually. I really am glad that we're doing it.
I'm really excited. I think it's going to be good. It's a very scary topic because it's very close to a lot of people's hearts, and there's a lot there, you know?
There is a lot there, and I've been feeling a little bit scared about going into this, too, just because it's something that is so near and dear to so many people, and it's something that I had absolutely zero experience with. Like, I literally knew nothing going in, and even 4 weeks, granted 4 busy weeks, but only 4 weeks was not enough time for me to really get a great understanding of what is going on with this show, so...
Yeah, well, it's not, like, an easy thing to digest. And, like, for me, like, I watched Utana in high school, and then I watched it again in college. So, like, I just have so much more background on this.
Yeah.
Oh, can you hear somebody crying?
I can hear somebody crying.
Okay, somebody has to come in here.
He's lonely.
He's sad.
I think before we go literally any further, I would just like to give a brief content warning. This is not going to be comprehensive, but just a content warning that we'll probably be talking quite a bit about sexual abuse, physical abuse, sibling incest, a little bit about animal abuse, and also if you watch the show, big warning for flashing lights.
Yeah.
So if you're sensitive to flashing lights, there are a lot of them.
I know. Yeah, that's something I never even thought about, but it's true.
I recently have developed a sensitivity to flashing lights in the past few months, and like seeing a lot of flashing lights can make me dizzy and make me feel really lightheaded or get headachy. And so there were many points in watching the show where I just could not be looking at the screen at all, where I just like had my head in my hands, to the point that I didn't even know how Utana got her sword until I asked Erin around episode 10.
Wait, it wasn't even, you were like telling me about the flashing lights, and then I was like, oh, that's probably when Utana is pulling the sword of Dios out of Anthe, and you were like, when she's doing what?
Yeah. Yeah, because I was like, I never really thought about how she got the sword. I just assumed that she was doing some sort of cool transformation.
Yeah.
For a few seconds. But this happens time and time again. There were some scenes in the latter half of the season that I didn't catch, that I didn't know what was happening in. I think it's probably that other people were having swords pulled out of them, is my guess.
Yeah, that is actually, that's the thing that happens.
But yeah, just if you do decide to watch, just be warned that that's a pretty big component of the show, I would say. It's in every single episode, so.
Yeah, yeah, Utena is something with a lot of, like, potential triggers for people. So actually, there is a complete comprehensive content warning guide, which is on vilecrocodile.tumblr.com. And we'll post a link to it on Twitter or on our Tumblr or something. But yeah, it like goes through episode by episode and tells you what you should look out for, basically.
Very, very helpful, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This was my first time ever watching Utena. I honestly had a hard time kind of staying engaged in it. But I wrote the summary based on my kind of perception of what happens in Utena as a first-time viewer. Granted, I also would self-identify as somebody who really doesn't get Utena. Can Utena be gotten? Debatable.
Debatable.
But I would say that astutely, I do not claim to get it. But I would love to just go over the summary, and if things jump out to you that I have completely off base, please feel free to add additional commentary or chime in with your opinion.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, Utena, it's hard. Things are literal, things are not literal. Everything is an allegory, everything is not an allegory.
Everything's a joke, but also everything's super serious.
Yeah. The recap episodes have very important plot points that you need to pay attention to.
I watched the recap episodes because somebody told me that, and I didn't recognize what the plot points were.
Oh, well, okay.
So that's something I missed.
Oh, okay. Well, you know.
I'm sorry.
No, don't worry. This is the fucking podcast, okay? I'll defend Aaron to my death.
Listen,
I
never claim to be an expert, but this is something I absolutely am not in.
We're just two people named Aaron who have a podcast, you know?
Let me try to give this Utena summary, okay? Mm-hmm. Revolutionary Girl Utena is a 39-episode anime series directed by Kunihiko Ikuhara. Also, there is a 2-volume manga that I have not read.
Me neither.
And a standalone movie based on the anime series that I did watch.
Me too.
But I'm going to give the summary for the anime version, the 39-episode television series.
Mm-hmm.
Once upon a time, years and years ago, there was a little princess, and she was very sad for her mother and father had died. Before the princess appeared a traveling prince riding upon a white horse. He had regal bearing and a kind smile. The prince wrapped the princess in a rose-scented embrace and gently wiped the tears from her eyes. "Little one," he said, "who bears up alone in such deep sorrow, never lose that strength or nobility, even when you grow up. I give you this to remember this day. We will meet again. This ring will lead you to me one day." Perhaps the ring the prince gave her was an engagement ring. This was all well and good, but so impressed was she by him that the princess vowed to become a prince herself one day. But was that really such a good idea?
And that's it. That's the show. Thanks so much for listening.
This is the opening intro for most episodes of Utena.
Yeah.
The thing about Utena is that there is a lot of repetitiveness if you have not seen it. And this is one of the opening narratives giving the backstory of the princess, who is Utena Tenjo.
But that's like a theme in Ikuhara's work where there's a lot of repeating
really
shit.
It really is.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
that princess is Utena Tenjo. As a teenager, Utena enrolls in middle school at Otori Academy, which is an elite boarding school where many students practice swordsmanship, whether that's kendo, fencing, or dueling of some sort.
Who knows?
But she ends up there on her search to find the prince. And she ends up in the sword duel involving the Otori Student Council, who all wear the exact same engraved ring that the prince gave her when she was a child. She learns that everyone is battling for the hand of another student named Anthe Himemiya, also called the Rose Bride. As the Rose Bride, Anthy becomes betrothed to the current reigning sword duel winner, and being with the Rose Bride grants the betrothed the ability to bring about the world revolution sometime. And Utena wins her battle, and she takes Anthy on as her bride.
Yeah.
So from there, Utena heads up the stairs to the roof to battle other student council members over and over again. And all of those students are fighting for Anthy's hand too, but they're also fighting for their own battles. So this includes Mickey, who has just become estranged from his sister despite their childhood love of making music together. Juri, who is in love with her best friend, but her best friend secretly hates her and started dating the guy that she thought that Juri had a crush on just to try to mess with her. Nanami, who suffers from severe overconfidence and very judgmental behavior, and who also manages to turn into a cow at one point. Sionji, who gets expelled from school and who beats Anthy when they've been together, but who strangely gets a redemption arc, quote unquote.
This was
you
one.
Call it that.
Is it a redemption arc? It's just.
I don't know.
He shows up again arc.
Okay, well, that's fair. He gets to come back and things are like normal, I guess.
I guess so. Everybody's. Yeah.
And finally, there's Toga, who is like the cool guy of the school and the student body president, and he is head over heels for Utena. While Anthy and Utena are together, we learn that Anthy's cool older brother, Akio, who is the stylish chairman of the school, who is idolized by almost everyone, has been sexually abusing her. We also learn that he is the prince who Utena met when she was young, and he was grooming Utena to become his perfect bride. He is the embodiment of, quote, the end of the world, at which point Utena must bring the world revolution.
All right, and then... I ended up deleting what Aaron had, I just crossed it out what Aaron had written for the ending because I just wanted to talk about it in a little bit more details and also fill in some stuff that I think maybe got lost at some point because, again, this is Utena, so it's not like these things are really like, it's not like written out exactly. So anyway, in a past life, Akio was actually the Rose Prince Dios. And Dios was the protector of all girls, but the stress of his duties was causing him to fall ill. So his sister, Anthy, protected him from the world by sealing his power, and thus gained the hatred of the world as a result. Instead of becoming a princess, she was labeled as a witch. And the scorn felt against her, like, it manifests as millions of swords which shine with the hatred I'm sorry. Of the humanity, basically. Anthy, she's forever struck by them, unable to die. So as the reincarnations of these two beings, Akio says that he wants to gain the power of the world revolution in order to save Anthy from this fate. But, you know, he never really, he doesn't really follow through with that. And he says that he shares her pain, but it's kind of clear in the anime that that's actually not what's happening. So Utena enters the final battle for the world revolution with no conviction to start a revolution. She just wants to do it in order to protect Anthy. So she starts fighting Akio, but at the end of the fight, she's betrayed by Anthy, who stabs her in the back. And as she does this, Anthy tells her that Utena could never be a prince because she's a girl. After that, Anthy hesitantly gives Akio Utena's sword, which he then attempts to use to open the Rose Gate. And the Rose Gate is where the power to start the world revolution is stored. So, I'm sorry.
What is the world, Aaron, what is the world revolution?
You know, I'm sorry. I'm laughing because as I'm reading this, I know it sounds really ridiculous. And I'm saying a lot of things that haven't been said before at all. What is a Rose Gate? Where is it stored? These are things that... they're there, but they're not there. Is the platform that they're on actually inside of this, like, stargazing tower? Is it really a projection? We're not 100% sure. You know, anyway, what is the power to start a world revolution? We can talk about that.
Yeah, I would love to talk some more about this, because you're reading all of this. I didn't get any of this from my watch through.
Interesting.
So, I kind of got some of it, but, like, I didn't really get any of it.
Wow. What I'm describing is actually, like, I mean, like, the whole, like, Akio versus Dios kind of thing, like, that's, like, not exactly there so much, but what I'm describing right now is is basically just like beat for beat what happens in the last episode.
Yeah, I guess.
Anyway, Akio fails to open the Rose Gate, and he breaks the sword that he has in the process. Utena ends up watching helplessly as Anthy disappears from in front of her, and as she reappears in the sky, she is pierced with these millions of swords. So then, chided by the memory slash potentially ghost slash potentially illusion of Dios, who appears as the prince that Utena saw as a child, she ends up like moving forward and rising and pushing past Akio in order to like get to the Rose Gate herself. There, in a desperate attempt to save Anthy, she pushes at the Rose Gate with her bare hands and reflects out loud that the times that she was the happiest was when she was with Anthy. The Rose Gate ends up opening, revealing the true Anthy asleep in a coffin. She yells to Anthy, and that wakes her, and she reaches out her hand to Anthy. But Anthy warns her that, like, hey, if you keep reaching for me, you're going to get struck by all those swords. And Utena's like, I don't care, give me your fucking hand. The platform they're on is starting to crumble as well because it's also being struck with all these swords. And so just before Anthy and Utena's hands can meet, the coffin that Anthy is in falls into the sea of clouds below them, and Utena is left alone on this platform. There she apologizes for not being able to save Anthy, and then she is struck by the swords of human hatred. So kind of we get a fade to black, and seemingly afterwards things have resumed to normal and people are starting to forget about Utena at her school. Akio sees the last set of duels as a failure and that he wasn't able to start the world revolution, and so he starts to set in place a new set of duels, but Anthy tells him that she's not going to participate anymore and she's leaving the school altogether. Utena may be gone from his world, but Utena is still out there and Anthy is going to find her. And so she sets out, she puts on a cute pink dress, and she gets her monkey friend Choo Choo, and they walk into the world.
And my understanding of this too was like, in throughout this entire series, the only person who has ever left the school has been Sionji. And who's that guy that Juri's love is dating? You know the one. He's the one who looks like he stepped right out of Gakuen and Handsome.
Yeah, he looks like a generic yaoi boy. I don't know. He's dead.
He does look like a generic. Oh, I forgot that he died.
Yeah. And Sionji doesn't even leave. He just goes into Wakabe's dorm.
Okay, sorry. I forgot that he didn't even really leave. Yeah. We only ever see we hear about one person leaving. We don't even see him leave. We just hear about him leaving. So Anthy taking this step out of the school, my interpretation of it was that like they had been living like literally physically in a bubble that was impossible to leave, and like something with Utena's sacrifice made it so that like Anthy was actually able to step out of the bounds.
Yeah, I like school. Yeah, it's like that, and that's where the like allegory versus a literal thing comes in. Like it's both kind of like, did she literally leave? Yes, and also the freedom, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah,
was it physical brand new freedom, or had the freedom always been there and she didn't know that she could do it? I'm probably not going to get this quote exactly right, but later when we're talking about Kunihiko Ikuhara, the director, I'm going to reference this interview that our listener and friend Ellie sent me. And one component of the interview, again, I'm probably not going to get this perfectly right, was that he said something like, women always think that they want freedom and that they want the ability to choose for themselves. But once they actually get freedom and the ability to choose for themselves, they realize that they didn't ever wanted it after all. And they wanted to have decisions made for them.
Wait, he says that?
Yes, he said that.
Oh, no.
Which, yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting parallel to like how this comes across at the end, because it's like, actually, let me say, it's not parallel, it's very perpendicular.
Yeah. Well, also just the whole like fucking show too.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, I mean, Jesus,
I don't know. I have so many interesting things to say about the interview that were decent, but that's just one thing that stood out to me as being like, you were really gonna say that, my dude? Yeah. Like,
Yeah, but I think that's actually one of the things that I really like about the show is, like, this kind of, like, magical realism aspect. There's, like, a lot of weird things happening, and they are very, like elephants, like, stampede, like, in a bunch of instances, or there's, like, a horse, like, running through the hallways, and, like...
Toka gets into a boxing match with a...
Kangaroo. Yeah. That happens, you know. That's actually not, that's like one of the things where I'm like, that's not an allegory, that's just something that happens.
A girl turns into a cow.
Well, yeah, she turns into a cow.
That's not allegorical.
She turns into a cow, and then Anthy knits Utena a red sweater, and then, like a matador, Utena defeats Nanami with her red sweater. I don't know. I like that aspect. I especially liked it as a teenager when I first watched this. And it reminded me a lot of, I don't know what the Japanese name of this manga is, but After School Nightmare, which is about a bunch of kids at a school and they are experiencing paranormal horror things that are like in the way of them graduating or not. And it's psychological. And that manga is what my interpretation is, a bisexual author convincing herself that she's straight, but you know, who knows?
I think that where Utena both caught me and lost me was with the reveal of Akio being Dios and his backstory in that, because like that was the first... I'm gonna sound like such a dick. That was the first time in watching Utena where I was like, wow, things are getting interesting. It's like episode 35.
Aww.
I also at the same time I was like, but I don't understand any of this. I was like, why is he Dios? Why does this matter? What is happening? Why would Anthy do this? I'm like, because they don't give you the context for why they're making any of the decisions that they're making. It's just like, these are the decisions that are being made. And I was like, I have no idea. Like, I can't wrap my head around it.
Yeah, with the whole like Rose Bride, Rose Prince kind of thing, that is one thing that you just kind of have to take at face value, in my opinion. And if you want to write us a very angry email because I said that, you can email us at aaron@gazegaze.com.
Also, if you know why we shouldn't take it at face value, I genuinely want to know, because maybe there were other things that I was taking at face value that I should not have. And this was the one thing where I was like, I need to know what's going on here. And this is literally the one thing that you're just supposed to accept.
Yeah. But yeah, I like stories with like bullshit, like rules like that, I guess. I don't know, where it's like, because even the first recap episode, I think it's like 7 duels that happen in the first arc, and each of the duels is given a name that like vaguely relates to the theme of it. And Akio is like talking to like the sealed Dios, and he's like, Utena has made it past the friendship duel, and now she's one step closer to the world revolution. And I don't know, I like that kind of bullshit. Yeah, I guess in the manga, the situation's a little bit different. Akio and Anthy, they're more like godlike figures. And instead of like sealing Dios's power, what she did was she split Dios into two beings, one being Akio, which was like his negative side, and then Dios being his positive side. And Akio's goal in the manga apparently is like refusing with Dios in order to like gain his full power. But I guess there's something about having split the two of them where Anthy like isn't at full power anymore. But I haven't read the manga, so also don't quote me on that.
I just realized that Anthy... Okay, wait, never mind. I just realized that... Okay, wait, no, I'm back in. I just realized that Anthy is potentially based off of a Greek goddess.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Anthea. Who is the goddess of flowers.
Oh.
And is the maiden aspect of Hera.
Okay, okay.
And Hera is Zeus's sister.
Yeah.
The mother and of... And wife, Zeus's sister and wife, and Dios means God.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In Spanish.
Exactly.
So it's a kind of a Zeus and Hera parody here. I don't know much about Greek mythology.
Yeah.
I'll also say that. As evidence in the Orpheus and Eurydice. Spooky.
Oh, shit. Episode. We're back at it again, kids.
When we did when we did Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and I admitted that I didn't know what happened in the Orpheus and Eurydice tale, and I thought that she exploded in outer space and was absorbed into the cosmos. So
look out, Anthony. There's a creeper behind you. I will admit when I was
you cannot.
I will admit when I was reading your description of the like last episode, I was like, is this another Lady on Fire situation where Aaron just kind of zoned out? Oh no.
I mean, I think that I will openly admit, I think that my lack of understanding with the final couple of episodes stems from a huge lack of understanding of everything else that happened leading up to it.
Yeah, that's
just
fair.
Because like if there's so much information that, and also binging this,
oh, binging probably this was not a terrible the move. Idea.
There was just so much information for me to retain in my tiny overwhelmed brain. Yeah. That by the time the final couple of episodes came along, I felt like everything was completely going over my head. I was like, what is the end of the world? Who is Dios?
Yeah.
What is this room that they're in? Why does Akio have magical powers? What is going on with the swords? Why is Anthea in a coffin in a box?
Yeah.
Like, literally my entire experience was just me sitting there like, what is even happening? And when you're in that space, it's hard to just take things in.
No, that's true. I really benefited from having already watched this. I can't imagine what it would have been like watching this for the first time and then having to talk about it on a podcast with somebody also named Aaron.
And thank you. And I think it's also partially a me problem, too. I will say that, like, I've talked to a lot of our friends who like Utena, and a good 50-50 of them have said, like, Aaron, you missed the critical period for Utena. You needed to watch this, like, slowly over weeks when you were 16, and that then you would be really into it if you had did that. And the other 50% of my friends were like, oh, I binge-watched this when I was, like, 25, and I loved it. Like, and I was like, great, good for you. Like, clearly I'm in the camp of I missed the critical period for this.
Wow. I mean, it's hard. And it's actually a lot of like things that stuck out to me when I watched it as a teenager actually like didn't stick out to me now or stuck out to me in like a different way. Like it feels
Wait, can you give some examples?
Yeah. I think this was like a bigger thing in the fandom like in the 2010s and like even before that where people were like, oh, you know, Anthy is so vindictive, Anthy's evil, Anthony secretly hates Utena. Yeah. And I remember that like at least seeing posts about that on Tumblr, so much so that I even like I wrote down what in watching this all the times where I was like, Anthy and Utena love each other and here's proof.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and I just like expected that to be so much more, and that's like not even a thing at all.
No. If anything, like in the early episodes of watching Utena, I was like, Utena has a massive like god and savior complex.
Yeah.
And like Anthy is just in a position where she like literally can't do anything and has to do whatever Utena says, so Utena's getting literally. Like all up in her head about like how can I be nice to Anthy and not manipulate her? But then just literally by existing, she ends up manipulating her by the nature of their relationship.
Well, that is the thing. So if I'm assuming everybody's listening to this has like watched Utena, but
I don't think that that's going to be the case. So if you can explain things a little bit better, go for it. I just know that I have a tendency, like when I am listening to media review podcasts, I'll listen to the episodes about stuff that I haven't watched. So that I can gauge if I want to watch it, you know?
Yeah, fair. So just like a little more detail on Anthy as the Rose Bride. Again, she becomes betrothed to whoever wins the duel that they're doing. I forget that the duels, if the whole thing has a name or not. But anyway, as the Rose Bride, she just like becomes an empty shell for whatever her fiance wants to project onto her. So as like Sionji's Rose Bride, like he was like, it's fine that I'm hitting her, like she doesn't care. As Toga's Rose Bride, she's like really happy to be the Rose Bride. And then as Utena's Rose Bride, Utena's like, you don't want to do this, right? And Anthy's like, yeah, of course I don't want to do this. But it's kind of like, is this how she actually feels? Or is this just another manifestation of her having no agency?
Exactly. Thank you for explaining that better than I could.
It's just another aspect of that is, like, Anthy having no agency is then anything that she does, like, authentically enjoy kind of becomes something that she's shamed for in typical circumstances. And then another interesting aspect of this is between, like, people reflecting on what they want Anthy to be, there's also, like, this parallel between people reflecting on, like, what they want their memories specifically to be like. So, like, a great example is Mickey, who he remembers playing the piano with his sister and how they were both so good at piano and they both loved playing piano together. And then all of a sudden, his sister didn't want to play piano anymore because she had to play without him, and it, like, ruined their relationship, basically. But what actually was the case was that his sister was never good at piano, but she just liked playing with him, and he was good enough at piano that nobody ever noticed how bad she was. And it wasn't until she had to play without him that she then was like, oh, I can't actually do this, and because I can't do this, I don't want to do this anymore at all. And similarly, he sees Anthy playing piano, and then it becomes this thing of, like, you like playing piano, right? And she's like, I like it if Utena says it's okay for me to like it. And then he's like, I want to become the betrothed because I want you to say that you like playing piano.
Yeah.
So that's, like, a theme.
Yeah. And I feel like there are some characters that have some interest in Anthy, Mickey and Sionji being two. But then, like, one character that you would expect to project something onto Anthy, but who doesn't really, is Juri, right? Mm. And that's because Juri respects women.
That's because Juri's the best character, actually.
I do like Juri, I will admit.
Oh my god, I love Juri so much. Just imagine me being 15 years old and being gay and watching Utena and seeing Juri.
I swear I read that Ikuhara was like, isn't it funny that, like, isn't it quite a twist that Juri likes women when she's so beautiful and, like, attractive? Oh, no. I was like, you drew a lesbian. Like, can't you see that? Like, anybody who looks at her should immediately recognize.
Well, what's so funny? Okay, I will admit, when I was fucking... You need to stop. I'm so sorry. It's because I was just on vacation. And so he's like, I can't believe you came back. All right. I will admit that when I was 15, I was, like, instructed to watch the episode where Juri is introduced. And I was faked out. I was like, oh, she has a crush on her male fencing, like, dude. And then it was like, oh, no, I can't believe she was a lesbian. But rewatching it, I was like, oh, it's incredibly obvious. It's not even subtle. It's not subtle at all. Juri's like, I'm thinking about the person I love, and then it fades to her fucking friend, her female friend. It's, like, not subtle.
What a twist.
What a twist. But you mentioned Ikuhara. Do you want to talk about him?
Let's talk a little bit about him. So okay. Ikuhara is most famous for making Revolutionary Girl Utena, though he has also made Mawaru Penguin Drum, Yurikuma Arashi, Sada Zanmai, and before anything, he made Sailor Moon R, S, and Super S, which is basically, he wasn't there for Sailor Moon the first season, and he dipped out right before Sailor Stars, which is the one that has more gender play, including the dubiously transgender Sailor Stars, including the one with the power of gentle uterus.
Oh! I do not know enough about Sailor Moon.
Yes, the Sailor Stars are, quote, like, men by day, women when they transform.
Whoa.
So that's why I say dubiously transgender, intersex. There's gender play going on. There's a lot of it going on in Sailor Stars.
I kind of
expected that Ikuhara was on Sailor Stars season, honestly. But he dipped out, like, one season before that. So
I wish that I had a gentle uterus. My uterus is angry.
Angry uterus. Anyway, so he had a lot to do with the later seasons of Sailor Moon. Though obviously he did not write the Sailor Moon manga, which the entire anime is based on. He just directed those seasons of the anime.
Yeah. So again, we're talking about our interpretations of Utana. And so this quote jumped out to me. For me, it's easy to explain these images, but I don't want to do it. If I explain it, everyone will believe that that is the only interpretation. I want people to know that there are many, many possibilities to find for themselves. And this is, Ikuhara says this in the behind the scenes of the Utana movie, specifically about Utana turning into a car. So I
was it, yeah, didn't you say like, yeah, yes, there are many things that are different between the television show and the movie. For example, right. In the movie, Utin turns into a car.
Yes, my favorite quote. So I put down this quote because I like it. I like it on the level of it is the like writer director saying it.
Mm-hmm.
In doing some research for this episode, I came along about a lot of people like referencing this and being like, I'm not going to tell you what I thought about it because you have to figure it out yourself. Which it's one thing for the director to say this because like there people are going to take his word as God and going to say that like there is no other interpretation because he is the one who wrote it. Mm-hmm. But you're like, for Joe Schmoes on the internet, like, share your opinion about Utana. Like, it's like, damn, dude, no need to be uptight about it.
I think that part of the reason why Utana has been a little bit scary for me to dip my toes into, not in terms of like watching it or anything, but in terms of talking about it here on the podcast, is because the fan culture is so based around thinking about interpretations of it,
yeah,
right? And spending time and effort and a lot of cognitive power trying to piece together what things mean.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that's really cool about Utana, is that it gives this like big platform for people to explore how some of these themes, particularly themes relating to trauma,
yeah,
like how what they mean to them.
Yeah, I will say again, every interpretation is valid, many many possibilities, but on the fucking Utana wiki in Anthy Himemiya's page, they say that she's the one who turned Nanami into a cow, which is not actually correct. That's the only interpretation. That is wrong.
How did that happen?
That didn't happen. They're like
she,
she's
did she mail the cowbell? Did she
no,
put a curse
it got
on
lost
it?
In
no.
the post.
I know. She literally was like, she figured it out for yeah. Nanami. She was like, oh, this is why you turned into a cow. I figured it out for you.
But yeah, it was like she Anthy has special witch powers, which is shown because she embellishes Utana's outfit before battle, and also she turned Nanami into a cow. One of those things is true.
Okay, if you know how she turned Nanami into a cow, let me know, because I want to start using that strategy.
If you if you think that Anthy turned Nanami into a cow, please send me your location. I swear to God, I just want to talk.
Oh my god. Okay, piggybacking off of your last Ikuhara quote.
Mm.
So as I mentioned earlier, our friend and listener Ellie sent me an interview between Mari Kotani, who is a science fiction critic and a translator, and Ikuhara himself. And at the beginning of the interview, Kotani asks Ikuhara, the Utana movie felt very theatrical. Was that something that you paid a lot of attention to? And Ikuhara said, well, no, I'm often told that, but actually I wasn't thinking at all. Somehow I just felt I wanted to make it more naughty than the TV series. That's about all that I thought.
I love that for him.
He's like, literally, I had my head empty. I just thought that we would make a movie.
I wanted Anthy and Utana to fuck in the movie.
Yeah.
But allegorically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Later on in the interview, Kotani pointed something out to me that I thought that was pretty salient,
mm-hmm.
Where Kotani said, there are certain recurring patterns to the duels. Utana appears to be fighting, but in reality, she's not. It's rather as if the people who enter each have their own problems, and they use the duel as a way to resolve them, and the opponent just happens to be Utana. So it is as if Utana serves as a stand-in for the things that they need to overcome. Utana is there as a kind of aspiration. Maybe you could compare her to a straight man character in a Kyogen comedy. It feels like she is a medium that can be formed into whatever objective they need to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in my watching, and this is probably something that's pretty obvious, but in my watching, I didn't really pick up that all of the characters were like just extrapolating their own shit onto this random stranger and fighting for something that they didn't really want as a means of just trying to figure out what the hell they're doing in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. In the anime, like, everybody has their own like thing that they want to get if they do a world revolution. And a lot of the times, like, or not a lot of the times, at the end of the series, like, they all kind of reflect on themselves and they're like, you know, what I was looking for actually, like, what I said I wanted isn't really what I wanted, and what I wanted was actually really selfish.
Yeah.
And that, like, more than anything else would get in the way for them.
They kind of have those realizations, though I will say for most of them, there's really not a big resolution at the end. Actually, I don't think for any of them.
No, definitely not. But for a lot of them, like, the realization itself is supposed to be kind of like the end of it. Because I do think a major theme in the series altogether is just adolescence and kind of like figuring your shit out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. One big thing that I found very interesting was a discussion between Ikuhara and Kotani on the nuance of Japanese linguistics for loan words specifically. So let me just read you this section. It's a little bit long-winded, but they will teach you, Aaron, what the meaning of the end of the world is.
Okay,
so we're finally going to get to learn what Akio being the end of the world really means.
Oh, no.
So Ikuhara said, romantic, in English, has become a word for girls, and romance, basically a word for men. In short, romantic is something that comes from the other, like I'll make you into a princess or I'll arrange a wedding at a wonderful location. It's a world which a prince will appear from and return into. While romance is something like venturing into the trackless wilderness, that kind of world. And Kotani said, even the words themselves are gendered into a word for men and a word for women. And Ikuhara said, right. So what I think is interesting is that while Utena is a woman, she is venturing into an essentially male romance. I tried to translate that phrase, quote, venturing into a romance, into venturing into the world. I stipulated that until now, there had never been a girl venturing into the world. And through the stages of the story, she becomes the first woman to discover, quote, the end of the world, unquote. I tried to think of a story where, because she is the first to venture into the world, she is also the first to know that despair. This was at the very start of the project. And Kotani said, I thought of it in the opposite way, that the end of the world is something which has been driven away to the borderlands, as opposed to the system which occupies a central position. In other words, I thought it meant those who deviate from the center. Which, just as in a personal error and aside, that's also how I interpreted it.
Yeah, that's how I interpreted it too.
But Ikuhara says no. Ikuhara actually says, I treat those as synonyms. It's a world where the further you try to reach, the further you're driven away. If you take a romantic stance, you don't particularly need to know about the system which covers the romantic situation on you. But if you try to maintain a romance, you need to know the system and the structure of the situation. So, again, as an addendum, basically saying men are supposed to understand the systems of the world, women are supposed to understand the symptoms of the world, and Utena is playing a man's role in all of this.
God.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm glad that Ikuhara said that people shouldn't take his interpretation as gold, because that sucks. Yeah.
Ikuhara also said, the romantic is something which comes to you, but for the romance, if you take a passive role, you will not obtain it. So basically, to get a better understanding of the world, you can't just sit by idly, like you have to be active to gain a better understanding of the world. And he said, in other words, you must necessarily involve yourself with reality. But when you're wishing for a romance, I think everyone begins with a dream. And as you try to reach that dream, you become aware of more and more problems and begin to understand the big picture. That is the psychology of someone who has reached the end of the world, who has become a boring adult.
Huh.
The Academy director, Akio Otori, is someone who saw the end of the world, understood it all, and then despaired. In other words, he became a boring adult. So the end of the world, in addition to just understanding systems, it's like understanding systems, understanding how the world kind of functions, recognizing all of the despair in that, becoming a boring adult, and losing your hope for humanity.
I'm becoming end of the world, you know?
God, aren't we all? God, I was like, 2021. Damn, this is just where all of we are with where all of us are with COVID.
Ikuhara, I was not on board, but I got on board at the end there.
Someone who, I know, it's there's like this whole lead up that makes like zero sense. And then, and then we get to the end and it's like, oh, actually, yeah. Yeah, dude, you're right.
Man.
Finally, from this interview, this is the last thing I have to say because it made everything click for me. Kotani said, watching it, the relationships between women, including the dialogue, were very sexual, very vivid, right? And Ikuhara said, but I think what it is expressing is simply yaoi. To do that using shoujo royal road-like characters and with two women is somewhat rare, I think. Literally, Ikuhara was like, I just wanted to make a yaoi about women.
And yaoi about this, women.
Him saying this made it all click for me. For the few people out there who are uninitiated, yaoi manga are manga about gay men written for women that often feature trauma and completely undecipherable plots. And also frequently feature, he specifically cited, like, as a yaoi depiction in Utena, as Akio and Anthe's relationship.
Oh, God. Which,
honestly, haven't you seen that in about 50 yaois you've watched? Tragically?
Oh, wow.
Yes. Right?
Wait, okay, how was this translated? Was it translated as yaoi or was it translated as BL? Or, I mean, I guess
it was translated as yaoi.
But was it, what did he say initially? Was it yaoi or BL?
I don't know.
Not that it really matters, honestly. I can't be cutting hairs with Ikuhara.
He also later described yaoi as... he made an Evangelion comparison, which is something that we should talk about this too.
Yeah.
That many people would compare Evangelion and Utena. But he described his understanding of yaoi as, quote, if Misato or Asuka from Evangelion raped Shinji, that would be yaoi. But if Shinji raped Misato, then it's porn.
There's so much to unpack there. Ikuhara was reading a lot of doujin and just was like, I gotta make this deep.
I mean, Ikuhara is an interesting person too, and it's just like, have you seen pictures of Ikuhara?
Not recently.
Ikuhara, like, I can only describe his style of dress as being very flamboyant. That's like the best way I can describe it, is that he wears a lot of like cheetah print shirts and like skinny jeans. And he's like kind of a tall, thin guy. And he also became somewhat known for cosplaying Sailor Mars at events. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, I did know that, but I'd forgotten. Oh my God. Yeah, he's an interesting guy. Evangelion. First of all, that quote is horrible.
That quote is so horrible.
Anyway, but yeah, people do compare Evangelion to Utena a lot. Kind of in the same way that I feel like when Madoka came out, Madoka got compared to Evangelion a lot.
Erin, while I was watching Utena, one of my big thoughts was like, I wish that I'd watch Utena before I watch Madoka. Because there is so much in common with the theming, honestly. Like, and Madoka also, if you weren't aware, was like created by this guy who literally was like, I just want to see young women suffer.
Oh, like, my God. That whole thing with Ikuhara and like the end of the world and like the romance and seeking like romance. God, that did remind me of the creator of Madoka and what he said about the show.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. Yep. Anyway, this gets compared to Evangelion a lot just because there's themes of like adolescence, the characters around the same age, and then identity is also a big theme, kind of like figuring out who you are. But then there's also kind of an apocalypse thing going on and fighting. And then I also think that the two get compared because Evangelion's thought of as like a deconstruction of mecha animes, where it's like if you had a bunch of 14-year-olds piloting these mechas, like they would be pretty fucked up about it. And also, what the fuck is a mecha and stuff like that. In a similar way, Utena kind of deconstructs fairy tales. Like a prince and a princess are thought of as like very literal things. And in the show, a lot of times, like, people are referred to as other people's princes and stuff like that. Like, Utena isn't literally a princess, and the guy you have a crush on isn't literally a prince, but it's like a title almost. I read this really good article from wrongeverytime.com, and it is called Performance, Identity, and Eternity, Revolutionary Girl Utena, and it was published in 2014. And I loved this article. I thought it was so good. So I have a couple quotes from this, which I just, we can talk about. The thesis, I guess, of this article is basically that, like, Revolutionary Girl is about identity as a personal truth over, like, a social construct, but also about how the social constructs of identity and personality can be so strong that they just, like, shape your entire view of the world and also how you see yourself and how you perform your personality. This article talks about like the idea of a prince as a traditional storybook male savior. Utena's like, she wants to become a prince, and initially that kind of starts out as she wants to become a prince in order to save Anthy. And then later on in the story, it ends up that Utena finally kind of recognizes Anthy as an equal and not a prince's tool. And that kind of, like, together, they can actually, like, do something. And I really like this interpretation because there's a turning point in the anime where the Sword of Dios, which is stored inside of Anthy, and Anthy's, like, basically literally the sheath for the sword. Around the final arc, the Sword of Dios just, like, completely disappears. And so Utena is about to lose her fight because she doesn't have a sword anymore. Anthy ends up running to her and is able to pull Utena's sword out of Utena. And then the whole sword thing, that was kind of introduced in the Black Rose arc where this guy, Soji, was kind of hypnotizing almost people into trying to kill Anthy. In order to do that, they would there would be kind of like somebody of their affection or like somebody who they wanted to change or control, and they would pull the sword out of them. And the sword is like your soul, basically, but it gives you their power. So in Anthy pulling the sword out of Utena, it's like Utena is finally has a sword that like reflects her own power. So yeah, I just really liked this article, and we'll link to it on Twitter. I think it's worth reading. The other thing that I really liked about it is like it talks about identity. So Nanami turns into a cow. That is because she ends up wearing this cowbell that she thinks is like a fancy designer necklace, and everybody else recognizes it for what it is, which is a cowbell. And so many people start to see her as a cow that she turns into a cow. So I think that's like expectation, and society's expectation is also just a major theme in Utena in general. And you see it kind of everywhere. That was really rambly.
No, that's okay. Now I'm just thinking about Nanami because I guess I hadn't interpreted it that way.
Before reading this article, I'll be honest, I was like, this is a fun thing that happens. I think my interpretation of that episode, if anything, was gave more agency to Nanami, where she where she was like just so oblivious that like she became a cow. And it wasn't.
I thought my interpretation of it was that she was so willing to like ignore reality that she was like leaning into this new found identity as like a personal decision rather than like as a societal implication of how other people view her. But I almost wonder if that was Ikuhara's intention, given how that removes some agency from her.
Yeah.
In that, I don't know. Who knows? That whole thing has just tripped me up. I'm not going to dig too deep into why Nanami is a cow. I'm just going to accept that she became one, and
yeah,
it was funny.
It is funny.
She also laid an egg.
And I will say, I don't understand that episode.
Understand that episode, but I do love Sionji in that episode when he is cooking the eggs.
Yeah. He's living in the woods and he's cooking the eggs.
You know, wait, we haven't even talked about my favorite guy in this anime.
Is it really?
My favorite guy in this anime is Chuchu.
Oh!
Chuchu is the best character in Utena, in my personal opinion.
This is
true.
I have
never been more drawn to an animal sidekick in an anime. I have never seen a more perfectly depicted animal sidekick than this monkey with ears that are significantly larger than its head wearing a little necktie.
And he loves food. He's great.
Like, literally, there's just something about, and he's so goofy. He's always getting up to shit.
Yeah.
Love that for him. I think that Ikuhara, in sum, the last thing I really want to say about him is that his head is both full of so many thoughts that it's impossible for me to comprehend, and also, like, no thoughts at all. at least in, like, my interpretation of everything I've read. I just would like to sum this up with a quote submission from Ellie, where Ellie sent me the commentary transcription from the anime television series for each episode. And for episode 13, Ikuhara said, "This is just between you and me, but when I was 14, I saw a UFO. That UFO telepathically told me this prophecy. When you grow up, you will direct an anime about girls revolutionizing various things. You must not tell anyone about me. If you ever do, people will call you a sketchy guy."
And Ikuhara, you are a sketchy guy.
You sure as hell are. I just don't know what to make of this man.
I believe it.
I both believe it and I think he was totally joking. Okay, very quickly, I would like to talk about stage productions.
Oh, sure.
Did you know Utena was made into 5 different stage plays? 5 different ones.
I did, kind of. I've seen a lot of GIFs from them.
Notably, the first one, the original one, was performed by an all-female cast in a production that was heavily inspired by the Takarazuka Review. Do you know about Takarazuka?
Only a little bit.
Takarazuka is an all-female musical theater troupe, the most famous one. And I would say that most American audiences are only familiar with their parody in Ouran High School Host Club, with the lesbian leaders of the Zuka Club, which is the host club's rival group from the neighboring all-female school, who want to steal away Haruhi. More recently, there was also the anime Kageki Shoujo that is just now finishing airing. Like, it's going to finish in, like, 3 days after we finish recording this, which parodies this type of theater, too, of all women theater. And one very popular production that Takarazuka puts on regularly is The Rose of Versailles, which is based on the manga by Ikeda Ryoko, which we've talked about a lot in some of our other episodes, and I feel like we still really have to do some Ikeda Ryoko manga at some point, Erin.
Yeah. I want to.
Takarazuka has done some other anime and video game productions in addition to Rose of Versailles, including Blackjack by Tezuka, Haikara-san, Ace Attorney, and I believe even City Hunter. But they most typically do classic film and literature, and most typically Western classic film and literature, like Romeo and Juliet, The Sound of Music, The Great Gatsby, and many others. Anyway, with Utena, it wasn't an official Takarazuka production, but they were very heavily inspired by it. And I think that from what I can see, the all-female casting for the stage play makes a lot of sense for this series. And taking it in this direction just, like, I don't know, it checks out and matches my expectations for a theater production about this piece. You know, the era in which Utena was popular, it was largely when you were in high school, right?
I think so. It's hard to know, though, because that was, like, before I was very active on social media. It was very popular with my friend Sydney, and we would talk about it together.
I feel like it was, like, popular in that era. Most people that I know, you know, watched it around age 16, 17, when they were starting to graduate into, like, edgy anime.
Yeah.
You know what else everybody was doing when they were in high school?
Making AMVs?
They were making AMVs.
Yeah.
This is true. Anime music videos.
Yeah.
So I requested that folks send some AMVs after our listener and friend Ali sent me an AMV set to a Dweezil Zappa cover of Britney Spears' Hit Me Baby One More Time, which the AMV starts out featuring Seonji and Anthy, but then it moves on to being about how Toga wants Utena to hit him. it's very silly, and I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was very funny.
It was so good. I watched it too.
Yes. Yeah, it's good. So I asked for some more AMVs, and I am going to share these out on our Twitter because these were two that I thought that were good. So Taya sent us an AMV from their country, Serbia, and this is a mix of scenes from the anime and the movie, and it's set to a song called Kao Krev Srevena, which Google Translate implies is about two people who are destined to be together, but one person can't fully promise themselves to the other person because they're also destined to be with other people too. And then the chorus is about blood red roses and her dress and love that has to face a type of love that has to face a predestined evil that's out there. So it seems very, very on theme.
Yeah,
and I thought it was good.
It was a really good.
Ellie also sent us a video titled More Cowbell, which is a tribute to Nanami, which is set to Because I'm Awesome by the Dolly Rots. I thought that this was just so fitting and so well edited. At one point it shows Choo Choo calling Nanami on a cell phone, and I just lost it. Like,
yes.
There's something about that that just like absolutely got me.
It's so good. Oh my god. I absolutely loved all of these. Thank you so much. Please,
yeah, I'm so glad that
send us more AMVs. God, we've talked so much, but I feel like we haven't even scratched the surface of Utena.
Erin, I need years. I need to like formulate my opinions. Now that I've seen Utena, I need to be granted a grace period of approximately 10 years to process it and to rewatch it and to think more about it. Because I didn't get it.
That's fair.
Erin, what else can you explain to me that I probably don't understand?
Well, this is something that there is not an answer, but I would love to hear your opinion.
Okay.
During the final battle with Akio, you know, Utena is winning until Anthy stabs her in the back. Do you have, like, an interpretation of that?
I fully thought that it was just because that was, like, a version of Anthy that Akio had projected as the Rose Bride, right?
I like that. I guess my interpretation of it was more, like, I think just kind of, like, a fear of change. There are some hints in the series that this is, like, characters are like, oh, it kind of feels like we did this before, specifically towards the end. And along with the fact that Akio is, like, preparing for another, like, tournament at the end of the series before Anthy tells him that she's not going to do it. It kind of feels like this has basically happened before, and they're, like, almost in, like, a time loop. So my interpretation of this is just, like, Anthy being so afraid of change and so afraid of going against her brother that she can't bear to, like, have somebody help her, and it's just, like, a self-sabotage.
I vibe with that. I think that in my interpretation, it was, like, wasn't it supposed to be that Anthy was the Rose Bride to Akio's Rose Prince? Or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, my interpretation was that Anthy was quote-unquote always the bride of Akio, but just, like, with all of these other people in the meantime until the end of the world and the world revolution, whatever. And so, like, ultimately, like, her alliance in this projected version was always to Akio, but the Anthy that was found in the box was the one that had been locked away in the room being stabbed by swords for eternity, and that's just a completely different version of Anthy.
No, that's true too. Yeah, you're right. Dang. It's really a tough deal with those swords, huh?
Yeah, man, being stabbed by swords for eternity.
I think the other thing too, going back to just kind of like identity and stuff, that was the thread that I lost there was I think I really like the interpretation of the story just being about how others perceive you and how you kind of perform that, because that really, I think the story about Anthy becoming a witch is like about how she was perceived versus like how she actually was, and so I like that parallel there, I guess.
Well, that, I mean, that is an ongoing thing too, especially with Utena. We haven't even talked about Utena's choice to wear the boys' school uniform.
Yeah.
Quote unquote, not actually. Quote unquote. she's wearing
her short shorts.
She's wearing booty shorts with the boys' school jacket. But that also goes hand in hand with like how that reflects on how everybody sees her, because then everybody in the school like does see her as like a desirable like male figure to an extent.
Yeah.
The women love her. The men love her.
The men wish they were as good at basketball as she is.
And sword fighting, damn.
And sword fighting, damn.
And getting girls.
And getting girls, yeah.
And keeping them.
One, like, fan theory, I don't know how popular this is, but it's one that I've seen before. It's an interpretation that, like, kind of leans more heavily on Anthy being, like, a witch with some kind of power. And this is one where it's like, oh, Utena is just actually like a projection that Anthy created in order to like help her. And Utena like isn't real. And that's why Utena disappears at the end. Because Utena was the friends we made along the way.
yeah, you know what? I mean, and that tracks with everybody discovering their true self through Utena, everybody else, like Juri and Mickey, right?
I guess. I actually hate this.
I mean, I don't like it, but I'm saying it tracks.
I guess so. Yeah, I just think it sucks. I will say that I think it sucks because it takes away Utena's agency as a person. And I won't say that it's because if Utena's not real, how is she and Anthy gonna kiss?
I mean, how much agency does Utena really have in all of this? It's really not that much until the end, in my opinion.
No, that's true. But that's kind of true for everybody. Like, most everybody is manipulated by Akio. And that's especially true in the last arc where he gets his fucking car out. We haven't even talked about the car.
I was just going to say, I cannot believe we have not talked about how he drives his car.
He drives his car, and so he takes people for a drive on this
intergalactic highway.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. And then at the end of his car ride, where usually people have sex in the back of his car.
Especially him and Toga.
And then at the end of that, he opens his shirt and then he flips onto the front of, or onto the hood of the car.
Yeah, because it's a convertible. So he like hops up and then does a little flip and then sits on the hood while somehow still driving the car.
Yeah, that's his power.
Like, sick move. I didn't know that being the prince of women meant this.
Yeah, you get a sick car. It's a good deal.
You know, we didn't end up really talking that much about the weird sibling relationships. We didn't even talk about Toga and Nanami.
No.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Man, which you know, is, there's too much to get into.
There's too much to get into. All right. Well, fine.
I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah. I love Utena and I love Anthy. I think they're good for each other. There is an artist who's done like a series of like mini comics where it's just like Anthy and Utena like hanging out in the real world, and like Utena doesn't like really remember like exactly what happened at Otori High, but like Anthy remembers, and it's fun. I like those comics.
That sounds fun.
I don't remember.
I will say, completely detached from what Anthy goes through in the series, Anthy is a character that gives me big Eren vibes. Like, I can see why you like her, because I'm like, yeah, like, this just makes sense. Like,
she's a Pisces.
She's very like you.
Did you know that she's a Pisces? I'm a Pisces.
You're a Pisces. Who in Utena is an Aquarius?
I don't know. We have to Google this right now.
All right, I bet it's Sionji.
Oh, God.
August 25th. No. I know that Nanami's a Leo. Utena, I think Utena's a Capricorn.
Oh, okay.
Sionji is a Virgo.
Yeah.
Toga is a Cancer. You know what?
Is Juri an Aquarius?
Juri is a Sagittarius.
Okay.
Mickey's May 28th.
Shiori.
No!
You get Shiori.
No!
That's you!
No, not anybody but Shiori.
Oh my god.
I get the homophobia one.
Oh, she's not homophobic. She just hasn't realized that she's gay yet.
Okay, that's true.
Yeah.
I get the internalized homophobia one.
Oh, that's so funny. I would have thought that, I mean, not to like stereotype, but I thought she would have been a Gemini.
Mickey's a Gemini. That makes sense. That makes sense. Because they're twins.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
Akio Utena birthday. I bet he's a Scorpio. September 15th, also a Virgo.
God, you know what? Who one character that we haven't talked about yet, who I'd love to know the birthday of?
Choo-choo Utena
birthday. Oh, choo-choo birthday.
No, we don't know what Choo-choo's birthday is.
Wait, you don't know Choo-choo's this birthday?
This is so fucked
That's
up.
Yeah, so, we don't I'm know so Choo-choo's sorry, birthday. Oh my God. You know who I love is Wakaba. We haven't talked about Wakaba at all.
Wakaba is just unapologetically gay.
But a straight gay person.
Is she? Is she? She's absolutely in love with Utena.
That's true. But then I guess I'm thinking about like Sionji's quote unquote.
Oh my God, I forgot about Sionji.
Don't we?
The only reason she likes Sionji is because Sionji is like a sad boy, and
that's true.
Lesbians who have not fully realized their lesbianism yet are obsessed with sad boys.
I know. You will not imagine my disappointment when, so there's an episode with the Onion Prince.
Oh my God.
Who is, this is during the Black Rose arc, and during the Black Rose arc, people are like corrupted basically to like fight in the duels. And they do that by like having this like quote unquote therapy session in an elevator where you then go into a basement and you meet a corpse. Don't worry about it. but anyway, during the Onion Prince's therapy session, he's like too true of heart and he can't be corrupted. He hopes that Wakaba has a crush on him because he has a crush on her. But as he's like talking to Wakaba about like, oh, who's your prince? What are they like? Do you think they like you back? And then Wakaba's like talking about her prince and he's like hoping that it's him and then it's not him. I was hoping that it was Utena, but
yeah,
it's Sionji.
Hey, Aaron, Wakaba, also a Pisces.
The joy in my heart. I love Wakaba.
yeah, she's good.
Yeah. Pisces, stay winning. Wakaba would be a Pisces to keep a sad boy in her dorm room.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about astrology.
Enough about Utena.
Enough about Utena, I guess. Oh, God. Maybe this is something that we'll revisit at some point. I'm sure
we'll be talking about it on and off as we are referencing other shit. I know you want to do... I hate to use that phrasing. I know you want to do Steven Universe at some point.
I love Steven Universe. I do want to do Steven Universe for the podcast.
I just don't know if I can do it, Eric.
Oh, man. We cannot binge that. You will die.
But I can't not binge it because I don't want to watch it. You know,
you need
like
to come here,
and you're gonna have to make me binge it because
I'm gonna tape you to my couch, and I will feed you things from the konbini for every episode you watch.
Okay, one konbini item per
episode, sure.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, I know that Steven Universe is a lesbian cultural touchstone. I know that I have to watch it at some point. I know it's an unpopular opinion to not really be interested in it, but I just have not had that drive to watch it.
That's fair. I can't even say that it's something that I think you're gonna like that much, so
I know. I know how inspired. The reason I bring it up is because I know how much inspiration Rebecca Sugar draws from Utena. I know how foundational Utena and also Takarazuka are to Rebecca Sugar and were when creating Steven Universe. I think that there are things that I'm really going to like. It's just it's literally the fact of sitting down and watching like children's TV that can be really hard for me to do.
Yeah, that's like totally fair, you know, because it is. I mean, there's a lot to enjoy, but at the end of the day, it is a kid's show. It's just a gay kid show.
We'll do it eventually. I just need like at least 3 or 4 months to watch it, I think. And I don't mean that like I need 3 or 4 months off from the podcast to watch it. I mean like while we're doing some other more chill stuff, like I just need to be doing that in the background.
I think that like watching Utena is a good cultural milestone because now when it gets referenced in an anime or an animated series,
I still won't understand it.
Okay, never mind then.
I'm glad I watched it for the experience. I still don't think that I'll understand it or get the references, tragically.
That's fine. There are many, many interpretations.
And literally somehow all of them just breezed right over my head.
As long as you don't think that Anthy turned a Nanami into a cow.
I can agree with you on that. So with that, I think we're going to start wrapping up. But before we wrap up, I have some news, which is that after this episode, we're actually going to be switching our hosting service that we use for the podcast. And this means if you're listening to us on SoundCloud, soon you won't be able to access these episodes anymore. SoundCloud's annual fees have only increased in the time that we've used them as our podcast host, and now there are just some better options for hosting available than there were when we initially started Gaze Gaze, so we're just looking to kind of move on from that platform. So we might be leaving SoundCloud, but we'll still be available on every other app that we're currently on, and nothing is going to change there. So if you're subscribed on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon, Audible, Podbay, Player FM, whatever other app you're using to listen to us, nothing is going to look different. And your subscription won't change or anything. SoundCloud is the only service on that list that's going away. And in place of SoundCloud, I'm going to be looking to start uploading our episodes to YouTube too. So keep posted for that change. Hopefully it will be coming soon. And when these changes come in the next few weeks or the next month or so, we'll also post about it on our Twitter and Tumblr just to keep y'all updated.
Cool.
Unfortunately, that means the backlog of our tweets that link to our SoundCloud won't be accessible anymore if you click those links. But
oh, oopsie doopsie. And also, when I finally get a viral tweet, I won't be able to say, here's a link to my SoundCloud.
God, the biggest, biggest disappointment of them all.
Truly, truly.
Yeah, anyway, I'm sorry about that change, but it's just gotta come. The other thing is that now that we're back, we're coming into October, and you know what that means.
Time to get scared.
Yeah, time to watch the scary stuff. We have a long list of fearful lesbian content that we will be saving some of for next year, but we're going to be doing two spooky, creepy episodes, the first of which will be coming out on October 5th, and that's going to be covering the Fear Street franchise. And on October 19th, we will be talking about lesbian vampires. So we'll be watching Carmilla and we'll be looking around at some other lesbian vampire content. And this is where I need your help. We both need your help. I do belong to a Dracula chat group that I will be soliciting feedback from. However, outside of our Dracula chat, just whatever lesbian vampire media recommendations you have, send them our way now so that we can get started ahead of time. So,
yeah.
I'm excited to talk about lesbian vampire culture. Vampires are sexy.
Me too.
And lesbians vampires
are sexy. And lesbians. Oh my god. Len wants to knock everything over. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway.
Anyway, with that, let's wrap up.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you so much for listening. If you feel like it, you should follow us on Twitter at GazeGaze. You can tweet with us, you can DM us, and you can also follow us on Tumblr at GazeGazePodcast.tumblr.com. A little inactive there these days. My apologies. You can email us at erin@gazegaze.com to send us thoughts, ideas, recommendations. Send your vampire content to us. Any platform's fine. Email would be great. And if you're looking to get in touch with one of us specifically, I am Erin Worm Moon.
And I am Erin Fishwife.
So you can use those to address us. Or if you are just trying to get in contact with either of us, you can just address it to Erin. We'll both understand that it's for both of us. Many, many, many thanks to Kate and Leslie of Neon and Nude for letting us use their songs Look and Love and You Pretty Thing for our intro and our outro music. You should go buy their album at neonandnude.bandcamp.com. But you can also stream it on Spotify if that's outside of your means. I would recommend picking it up on Bandcamp and supporting queer musicians.
Yeah.
So we'll be back in 2 weeks with our Fear Street thoughts.
Yeah. Gonna get all fearful.
I did not realize that Fear Street was based on the R.L. Stein books. I'm going to be real with you. I thought that it was just a funny coincidence. I was obsessed with Fear Street R.L. Stein books as a child.
Oh, no way.
And I want to reread some. I've been talking. I literally just the other day, I was telling some of my friends about my favorite Fear Street books.
Wow.
So I'm really interested to reread them and interested to see which ones they feature because I fucking love Fear Street.
Wow.
I didn't realize. I literally completely, fully, and honestly thought that this was just a weird coincidence.
Yeah, I didn't know it was based on anything.
Yeah, it's based on R.L. Stein books. They were Goosebumps, but for teenagers. I'll tell you about my favorite Fear Street books.
I'm ready. I'm so ready for that.
Now I gotta find them. I'm gonna start rereading Fear Street tonight. Damn. I'm Erin.
And we're gay.
And that is all.
That's all. Goodbye. I love you.
Bye. So glad to be back.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.